how many of you played Monopoly as a kid or as an adult or last weekend? Welcome to Cairo Nights. Frank Shires is here bossing the news. Shane Peterson is over there chairing every board we throw his way. I am Mike Lewis. We're going to be talking about Google, of course, the biggest Monopoly game in the world, according to the U.S. government. We're going to be talking friendships at a distance, television up close. And to get there, we'll be needing Rachel and Stacy and all the crew here at Cairo. But first, we are talking about the governor and the governor's new restrictions, mostly aimed at college campuses, which means it's mostly aimed at a particular age group, which has been largely, I don't know, depending on your perspective, credited or blamed for the recent surge in coronavirus cases nationally, not just in Washington state. The number of coronavirus cases in Washington state has been rising at, quote, an alarming rate, health officials have been saying, and we might be joining the rest of the nation in, quote, a fall surge. This is the State Department of Health, and it said this in a press release. In King County, it's according to the Seattle Times, the seven-day average for new positive COVID-19 tests had dropped to a recent low of 77 cases on September 17th. 3 weeks later, on October 9th, it was 154 cases, so nearly doubled. In fact, it had doubled. According to state data, health experts had feared that the seasonal rise would strain the capacity of the healthcare system, and they're seeing a surge, according to Ali Mokdad, a professor of health metrics at the University of Washington. In December and January, there's going to be a difficult couple of months. And so what the governor is doing is trying to get out in front of this by mainly targeting universities because that's where the virus seems to be really blooming most places in the country. Just listen to this.
It will require masks at all times in living areas on campus, except when outside or in sleeping areas. Congregate sleeping porches will no longer be allowed, and no more than two residents are allowed to share the same sleeping area.
So these are part of the new announcements, and it came as the college, the University of Washington Greek Row, actually, here in Seattle, is a primary reason for this, for the governor's announcement. What's happening there is suspected to be a precursor for what's going to happen in college campuses, because there are campuses, even though they're doing remote learning, a lot of kids moved to those towns. There are plenty of kids who didn't, who actually decided to stay and do their learning remotely. But nonetheless, many have moved in the areas. And so they're still, while they're not in class, they are still socializing as per, you know, some guidelines, but mainly in ways that the governor feels like are going to create additional surges. He says that he still believes education can go forward safely, but that we need some additional safety measures to protect, this is a quote from the governor, to protect not only the students, but the larger community and their families from this pandemic. So what are the new restrictions? Under the new restrictions, colleges have to provide quarantine and isolation facilities for any students living on campus in dorms, Greek system houses, off-campus congregate housing, and any personnel who don't have somewhere to go. So if you are in Greek housing, the school is supposed to be providing some form of isolation housing for you, or the Greek system itself, or perhaps your own facility can. One visitor will be allowed in a dorm room or a sleeping room, and any visitor must wear facial coverings and keep facial distance. Facial coverings will also be required when students are outside their sleeping rooms, such as common areas, if they go to the library, if they go to those areas in a dining area where people are sitting around. They're going to have to keep those things on all the time, only five people in one place at a time. For instance, a group of students watching the Apple Cup, this is according to Seattle Times, cannot be watching a group larger than five, and they must wear facial coverings and keep a six-foot distance from each other. The governor said, when we watch the Apple Cup, we just need to socially distance. We need to wear masks, even with our good friends, because those are the settings that transmissions are occurring. The higher education institutions that don't have residential facilities must come up with some sort of a plan with their local health district to make sure their students are staying far apart. So this is, if you were wondering about what everyone was concerned about way back in summer about the fall spike, well, we are in it right now. And understand also this, what medical experts say is that when you see a rise in infection like we're seeing now, what you're going to see 2 weeks down the road and a month down the road is not just an also potentially a continued rise in infections. What you're going to start seeing is additional hospitalizations. Now, so far, the area has done pretty well at keeping remembered so well early on that the field hospital that was briefly set up here was dispatched to another state. But now we are in a situation where we're not running out yet, according to the health officials, but the pressure on the system, they have a pretty decent way of calculating the ratio of infections to necessary hospitalizations. And if the infections keep going up at this rate for another couple of weeks, we are definitely going to start pressurizing the hospitalization, the beds available, for people in this area. And that is where it's going to get pretty problematic, even though this area is better than most in terms of hospitals and quality care. And even though this area also has been kind of on the cutting edge of various treatment methods for coronavirus, I mean, given where it started, this area has been working on this problem for quite a while. And so there are things that bode well if you live in this area and this does happen in your community. But the concern is that there are going to be it's a healthcare system that is going to be badly overtaxed come December. And this is going to be a potential problem. So if you can, at least in my opinion, please, please do what you can. Limit that, time with other people. Go back to as much distancing as you can. I suspect we're going to see a rollback in the restaurant standards as they exist right now and the bar standards. If this thing ticks up and it doesn't show that it's letting off soon, we will see. I mean, there is an additional huge concern that I share personally about the economy and the effect of this. But the fact is we're going to have to get through this in some manner by not oversubscribing the healthcare system and not packing the hospitals to the point where we actually can't treat people. Because remember, early on in Italy, they were making the decisions, and there's some heartbreaking reporting out of Italy, for example, and Spain, where they just had to say, look, that one's too far gone. We're going to spend no more time with that person. We got to take this other younger person who may get through this. And those were the decisions that they were making there. Let's hope that we don't have to get to that place here. Now, I bet you're wondering, are you going to be seeing, given coronavirus and its effect on all of our jobs, some of you may be working more as a result, some of you may be working less, and some of you may be not working at all. So what is going on with the stimulus package, and should you expect to see one anytime soon? Well, this has been a bit of a moving target. To explain it as simply as possible, it has been the calculus on, it would be nice, right, if the calculus on a stimulus package were purely about helping people and who you should help and how much you should help them. That's sort of the core of that is still within the stimulus package. But the larger issue is, when do you approve something like this? When do you pass something like this? When do you decide that the timing works for you, works for the people who need the money, and works for you politically? And this is where we are right now. So early on, a month ago or so, the president said absolutely no stimulus package is going to happen before the election. I think this was when perhaps he was still maybe a little bit in doubt about the accuracy of polling numbers. But as those polling numbers seem to have penetrated his circle of advisors, and there is a genuine concern about re-election now, the president has warmed to the idea, knowing, of course, as any president would, of any political persuasion, if you fork out a whole bunch of money to people in need, you do buy some goodwill. And in fact, I'm assuming that there are people in the administration that really do see the need for a stimulus package, because there's a lot of people now who have run out of any unemployment money, do not have jobs, do not have job prospects. Companies that are laying people off pretty rapidly. We've seen the airline industry, for example, one of the big movers in this case, laying off tens of thousands of people over the last 2 months, and it's going to simply continue. So there is a lot of pressure from the business community, help us out in some fashion. But And so the Democrats have decided, well, all right, we'll go ahead. And they feel like because the president has now flipped and decided he is interested in a stimulus package, that they can get the stimulus package that they wanted, which is more in the $2 trillion range. Maybe they would go a little bit lower than that, at least according to what I've been reading from the reporting there. And the president has indicated that he's pretty interested in getting something through because he knows, I think correctly, that that will help his reelection chances. But there is somebody involved in the process who doesn't really see it that way at all. And that someone, oddly enough, is Mitch McConnell. McConnell, it has been reported, does not see an advantage for Republicans at this particular juncture for pushing a bill ahead. There are two primary reasons. The first one is that the real budget hawks in the Senate, the conservative budget hawks in the Senate, just can't stomach the idea of additional deficit. Our deficit is soaring to about $3 trillion now and going to go higher should we do another stimulus package. Now, you can make economic arguments about this is exactly what the government should be doing as it did during the Depression. You can also make another argument that that sort of debt load saddles future generations with debt should the economy not improve rapidly. Let's set that aside, but that is essentially where some people have dug in. But the other place where people have dug in is that they feel like they're going to be saddled with this massive amount of money going out and still not get the president whom they largely agree with back in office. And so McConnell's calculation, and this is the same sort of calculation he made when the Senate decided to not approve Merrick Garland for the Supreme Court. He's like, well, all right, let's just hold. This is funny because this is a fair parallel with that one. Why do we do something now when we can just wait and see how it works with the next president? So McConnell has told Senate colleagues that he does not want to see any stimulus package prior to the election. Now, he realizes, I think, of course, that this is not going to help the president get reelected. But I think that he may have already thrown in the towel on that one. And what he really doesn't want to do is get saddled with something he doesn't like. And he would rather put it squarely in the lap of the Democrats should a Democrat get elected. And so he's making, in this particular case, a pretty specific political calculation. According to the New York Times, with coronavirus cases continuing to rise across the country and tens of millions of American families and businesses going without critical federal benefits they need, the chair of the Federal Reserve has said now is the time to really push this sort of a stimulus package. But the developments on Capitol Hill have been this, what everyone is saying, who works there, is saying this kind of extraordinary 2 weeks before the election in which the president, who once had unwavering loyalty from Republicans in the House and who people who rarely would break away from him, fearing not only repercussions, but repercussions within their own district, given the popularity in conservative circles, the popularity of President Trump, they're now starting to back away from him pretty rapidly. You've heard various comments from senators saying what they're saying now about the president, which they always felt privately, but didn't have the courage or the distance in polling to be able to say publicly. They're saying that now. And so all of this ties back into this idea. Should you expect to see a stimulus package? Well, Larry Kudlow says President Trump wants both sides to seal the deal. And I think the president still thinks he can arm twist enough Republicans to get this thing through.
President wants a deal. He wants the key areas, though. That's the point. It's not top line numbers. You know, PPP, small business, we should have done this months ago with $135 billion still unspent.
So in a press conference with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, he said something different to his colleagues privately, but publicly he said if Pelosi Mnuchin can come to an agreement on a new bill, then at least they will take it up in the Senate.
I'm aware that discussions continue between the president and the speaker about a larger package. Obviously, if that were to come over, we'd have to consider it and would consider it.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said that if an agreement on the stimulus package is not made today, Tuesday, it will be too late to enact anything by Election Day. President Trump had previously called off talks, saying he wouldn't negotiate until after November 3rd, and then reversed course not long after that. CBS News correspondent Nicole Killian had this to say.
We know Republicans don't necessarily want this $1.8 trillion price tag, but they are willing to see whether the president and Speaker Pelosi can kind of come to some agreement that would be palatable to Republicans. But the bottom line is they have to look like they're doing something. I mean, voters are heading to the polls. We've talked to many of them who have expressed that they are hurting. So to act like there's no movement is not necessarily an argument you want to make in the final days.
And so, as a backdrop to all this, of course, is Judge Amy Coney Barrett, who is expected to be confirmed for the Supreme Court by early next week. Mitch McConnell has told the White House he was concerned that a deal before then could inject unwanted unpredictability into the schedule, according to four Republicans who are close to him. This is all according to the New York Times. And so, where are we at? Well, so what appears to be most likely at this point, barring any sort of big change in the people who are involved, the speaker seems to be thinking that if a deal doesn't happen immediately, can't happen before the election. It's a pretty complicated thing to do. The majority leader in the Senate seems to feel the same way, doesn't want to jeopardize the Supreme Court justice process in any way by tying up the Congress with other things, or certainly the Senate with other things at this particular juncture. So he's kind of leaning against. The president, of course, is leaning for it, which is a massive proper, you know, massive pry bar in this whole process. And so we have to see whether or not, all right, is this something that is going to move ahead before the election? If I had to gamble on this, I would say the Amy Barrett is very likely to be confirmed as the Supreme Court Justice. A stimulus package, I think, is a ways off. Could a stimulus package pass after an election? Should the president win? Yes. Could a stimulus package pass after? Should the president lose? I am guessing that's pretty unlikely. And so if you are in a position of needing, except maybe something very narrow, needing federal help, I would definitely, I think it's time to get a little bit concerned, because it's not likely to happen, I think, in the short term. But we will see. And I would certainly love to be wrong about that, because a bunch of people do need help. Coming up, we're going to talk to Rachel Bell. So how have you maintained your friendships during coronavirus, and what actually works? She's got a bit of advice for all of us right after the break.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell. You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
So, Rachel, I have a question for you.
I would love to answer it.
How?
I'm an eager beaver today.
All right.
Lay it on me.
Okay.
Okay.
Here comes a question. Are you ready? You ready?
I told you. I've been ready.
All right. Yeah. How is it that you, during the pandemic, how do you keep in touch with friends? In other words, we can't get together. You can't call someone up and go have a beer. So you've got to do these other things that actually allow you to connect with people, but you can't actually connect with them. What do you do?
Well, I have actually hung out with plenty of friends in town by hanging out outside.
Right.
But for people who don't want to hang out and people who are far away, I got to say, I am not into the Zoom thing. I just dread those conversations. I don't know why. It introduces a level of anxiety that I didn't even know I had, like communicating with people. So I would rather talk on the phone, just like old school style.
Right.
I do that. A lot of texting. I was just forced last week to join Marco Polo. I don't know if you know about that app.
I don't.
It's this app where you communicate solely through making videos of just yourself talking, and then it sends it to the other person, and you just like make video messages. And I have sent a lot of postcards.
So it's just video texting, essentially.
Video texting. Yeah, just kind of built into the platform. But there was this article I read that really resonated with me, titled Maintain Your Friendships with a Boring Weekly Email Thread. And in it, do you know who Gretchen Rubin is?
No.
She is at this point like a happiness expert. She wrote a couple of books about happiness, not having to do with depression, but just
I think I have read about her. Yes.
Yeah, she's great. And she said that she was talking to her mom, who said, when you're in touch with a person all the time, you have a lot of things to say to each other. But when you rarely see a person, you have a hard time coming up with things to say. And it's kind of the idea, you know, if you haven't talked to someone in a year, you have to tell them all of these big life things. It's like, oh, I got divorced. Oh, I got a raise. And it's the mundane that really keeps friendships going.
That's true.
So I have one friend in particular who I share a tremendous amount of boring information with. And in turn, she shares her boring stuff with me. And years ago, we established, you are my boring person.
Right.
So like last week, well, I'm sorry, I showed you this too. Like, yeah. I sent her the pictures of my bathroom drawer reorganization, which
yes, you did.
I looked
you
at
showed
so
anyone
much.
Who would stand still long enough to look at them. You're
I,
so
was
happy
like
about
looking
it.
Looking at porn. I was like under my desk, like looking at the pictures, just like, oh my God, I can't stop. And we're always sending, like, you know, look what I did with my avocado. Like, this is the most boring stuff. But I have to say, because her and I live in different states, that I feel closer to her than a lot of people because I know all these little things.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just big life events.
Well, that's actually how you, I mean, we've talked about this, I think, recently on the show about the whole nature of adult friendship, and that you build a friendship as a kid by just this repetition. It's in school. So you build it, or a club or something like that. You just see them, and gradually you start getting along. But part of that is the exchange. It's not always like heavy amounts of information or important stuff. You kind of build it the way you kind of spackle that whole thing together is with the mundane, like the regular hanging out. And I think that those conversations that are not fundamentally important, like life-changing moments or stress moments, maybe just the boring stuff about finally figuring out, you know, your email situation, or finding a way to organize your sock drawer.
Bathroom drawer.
Whatever. I just organized my sock drawer, so that's why okay. I'm saying that. We all have our things. I think that those things actually are, I mean, it's on the natural. If that's all you ever talked about, maybe not much there.
Yeah.
But those are the sort of like little threads. And I think it's entirely true. I talk better with the people I talk to more regularly than the people I don't.
I think that it's important, though, when you're talking about the mundane, that it's like mundane things that the other person cares about, because it can get too mundane. Like with this friend, we talk a lot about mundane things about food and cleaning, and then also just like, how do you handle this situation with this person? Stuff like that. Whereas some people tell me the mundane, and I am like, oh, I do not care. Like, I don't want to hear. I never want to hear about traffic. I don't want to hear about, like, how you got cut off, every little detail. Like, I was in the intersection and then they came up this way. Like, I do not care. So it's important to somehow figure out the perfect boring.
Yeah, but even within that, I mean, we're sort of probably self, you know, we're filtering a bit right now. I've had plenty of close friends bore me, you know, and I'm sure I've bored many times plenty of close friends.
No, you, come on.
It is endemic to the situation. But as long as the whole thing doesn't contain nothing but really picayune stuff. I do know people, I know someone who I'm kind of close to, who does tell the most profoundly boring stories. Could take any story, could take a heist film and make it just like sound like a shopping list.
It's what do you really, do?
Well, you know, you just kind of ride through it because they're a good person and you will get to a good place at some point. But I think the bigger lesson here is that regular email or whatever it is that you're doing to stay in touch with people, that it's regular more than anything else. Like, worrying about like having all kinds of great content is less important than that just sort of regular interaction, because that sets the table for when you actually need that closeness and you need that person to talk to. If you don't have any sort of normal relationship with them, it's weird to have a friendship that's nothing but fraught, right? With pressure. It's nice to have ordinary conversation. But I still have to say the email thread thing is probably pretty, I mean, I'm on a few of them, and mainly it's just about organizing something or talking about something, but I just don't know that I would do a data dump once a week on something like that.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work with me.
I don't really like this idea that it's like, okay, it's Monday, time to write down all my boring stuff. I feel like it should just be when the mood strikes you. I'm kind of worried about going into the dark, cold weather, because this is when it's going to be hard to see friends. Because luckily, you know, the pandemic started at a time when the weather wasn't so bad. We went through summer. I think a lot of people are going to start getting lonely once you can't do the outside stuff as much. Although, there's a lot of backyard tents and heat lamps being purchased by, you know, regular old people.
All over, several of my friends have purchased the backyard propane. Excuse me, the backyard propane heaters. And
dare you burp in my section.
And that is, and those things also at various levels of their capacity to assemble these things. So frequently they're not working anyway. But this nice, it's nice as an idea. Yeah, that stuff is going to go only so far. I think it is going to be a hard season on people. I think it is going to be a little bit difficult for people who don't have the space, especially someone living in a small apartment who doesn't even have a space on their own.
That's what I was just going to say, is like, just like everything else in life, like the more money you have, the better off you're going to be. Like if you don't have a backyard or friends with backyards, if everyone lives in an apartment, what do you do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, and maybe those emails and maybe Zoom calls will suddenly start seeming like a little better thing to do than it does right now.
Better than nothing. Well, if people listening want more friendship talk, that is the latest topic of my newest podcast, Your Last Meal. You can listen wherever you get podcasts or at Your Last... Oh no, you burped. I'm having like a frog in my throat. What's happening? Puberty's next. Exactly. YourLastMealPodcast.com.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to get into one of the more interesting cases filed by the federal government in a long time. And this is about Google and about antitrust. And you may think that these antitrust cases are common when it comes to tech companies. Certainly Microsoft has faced some, Amazon has faced some, but this one could be a big game changer because Google is a platform for a myriad of companies. We have some sound from the CEO of Expedia, who is thrilled that the government is actually going after Google, who he has said has been competing unfairly with a variety of companies because it creates a platform and then it allows companies to sell on this platform and then it competes with those same companies. Really interesting story coming up at 8 o'clock. Stay tuned. Ago when I was a very young reporter and working for the Modesto Bee, I got a chance. In fact, they assigned me to cover, as part of my duties, to cover Yosemite National Park, which was a ridiculously good opportunity because I could get paid, not much. I mean, it was back in newspaper and in a small newspaper, but nonetheless, I could get paid to hang out in Yosemite National Park. And I got a chance one time to go up there after a big fire had burned through a sizable area of the park and go through a couple years after the fire with a group from the Audubon Society, because they always said, and this is what the park naturalist said as well, that when you see the bird populations returning, you know that the forest is on the mend. And so we went up there and it was an amazing opportunity to hike around with birders, because not only are they interesting and weirdos to some degree in that they're completely obsessed with either looking very high in the canopy or very low on the ground, depending on what they're looking for. But you end up seeing an entire world that you would not normally have seen, that you would have walked right by. And they have amazing ability to pick out very small, very discreet things in an environment that you would just look right past and, you know, keep on walking. It turns out that during the pandemic, one of the things that has picked up, in fact, has really blossomed for people, one is a desire to do something they can do a little bit on their own or with just another person. Two, something they can even do around their own house, because a lot of people are working from home or not working at all. And three, it is something that can take your mind off the rest of the stresses in the country right now. And it turns out that one of the things that's getting massively popular is birding again. And it turns out, you talk to the people at the Audubon Society, that there are there's a wave of interest in people. They're looking out their windows. They're sitting there looking in their backyards. They wonder, well, what are those things? They may know, you know, a robin and they may know a crow, but they may not know a whole bunch of other stuff. And so the Washington Post did a terrific story on how to get started birding if you are interested. And if you are sitting at your house or walking around your local park or in an area where you can see a lot, there's a, you know, the nice thing about birds, you don't have to go very far to find a huge variety. And so what they suggest is this. One, get a good set of binoculars because you're really going to need them at some point. They recommend, I'll send out a link to this on my Twitter feed. I'll send out a link to this specific article. There are a few that are really, really not expensive binoculars that can help you out a lot. One, practice on easy targets. Check out, get used to your binoculars looking at things that are relatively close. One of the key things they said is, download Merlin. It is a bird identification app, and I've used it. It's kind of remarkable. You can even get it. It's machine learning can even, if you take a picture of a bird, it can tell you what it is, which is dynamite as well. Also tell you about the bird, where you find them, habitat, things like that. All right, this one's going to be a little harder for some of you. Wake up early. If you notice, songbirds go crazy early in the morning. They don't go crazy later in the day. But there are plenty of birds, if you're not an early riser, plenty of birds that are all-day birds. For example, hawks and a lot of waterfowl are. And so, and they're pretty great to look at. One, pick a sit spot. So one of the great ways, and I learned this from a friend of mine who is a pretty committed birder, sit still somewhere and let things gather near you. You'd be amazed at what you've been walking past all of this time that you haven't actually seen. And it really is kind of remarkable. And plus, they don't mind if you, as long as you're at a distance, you can stare at them all day. Know where to look. And this is one of the things you can get if you go on the Audubon.com, go on the Audubon Society's pages. They give you really good instructions on knowing where you want to look, because the thing about birds is birds are like us. They have specific habitats that they like. You know, ours might be the kitchen table or the couch or someplace, or maybe in our car. Birds have places that they return to time and time and time again. Now, if you've got a bird feeder, well, then you know that's one of the places that they're going to be. But there are a lot of other places. If you just know where to look, you generally can start seeing a lot more birds. One, bring the birds to you is what they also say. So this is an interesting point. So they go on about how you can get a good bird feeder. And really that allows you, and you've seen this on YouTube as well. People will set up a remote camera, a good bird feeder, and film everything that comes in and out of there. And in fact, a lot of those cat entertainment videos are specifically just that. The downside, of course, to a bird feeder is you really do have to, I mean, the Audubon Society would tell you, take that thing down in winter when birds migrate, because you can actually force birds out of their natural movement and natural cycle when you're giving them food, when they should be moving and then coming back to find more food. And then also look at eBird. Yes, it's called eBird. It will tell you where to look. It tells you everything you want to know about birds. Look that up on the web as well. But I tell you, you know, as having a couple friends do it, I know it sounds super nerdy. It actually is a pretty great way to spend some time and to clear your head and learn a little bit more about the world within 20 feet of you almost every day. All right, coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk Google, big lawsuit, and the idea of what is a monopoly and why is Google getting attacked by both Democrats and Republicans. Like someone said, one of the few things the Trump administration and Elizabeth Warren agree on is Google as a monopoly. Coming up after the break.